Hi, I'm Jenna and I'm an Alex.
Hi, Jenna.
Could we open this with a serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I don't want to do this. I hate, speaking. I'm always so nervous, but then after I do it, I'm, grateful that I did it. Well, my clean date is March 7th, 2007, or March 6th, I'm sorry, 2007. And I'm a youth, and I'm in recovery, and that's all I have. No, I wish it was that easy. I just want to read something real quick out of the 12th step of the basic text. It says, "The message, however, is meaningless unless we live it. As we live it, our lives and actions give it more meaning than our words and literature ever could." I'm not, a big talker, speaker. I'm not, real profound or anything. So, I like that because I know that I don't have to, come up here and, wow everybody. It just matters that I'm, doing what the program suggests and I'm staying clean. Okay. I'm only 25. I got clean right after I turned 22. And, I hear, some of the old-timers, someone said to me today, he's like, "Oh, I was just getting started at 25. But, it doesn't matter, how old you are when you get clean or, how much you used or whatever. I know that I'm an addict and, I have an advantage that I got clean young and that, I'm getting my life together and, I'm a productive member of society. And, whenever I first started using, it was just weed and, not just, but I mean, I always said I'd never do anything else. And it went from weed to everything in between to shooting up. So, that just shows how the disease is progressive and it's not controllable. I couldn't control it. I never wanted to do anything else, but it happened that way. And it just all was a chain event, using was crazy. And I didn't realize it whenever I was using, because I used to always say, I'll be 40 years old and I'll still be smoking crack. And, I just thought that's how it was going to be because I was around people that were that old and they were smoking crack. So I just assumed, I was going to be like them and I was going to smoke crack my whole life. But towards the end of, before I quit, it was just unmanageable and I hated it. And, because there was just, the people you hang around, when you're getting high, it's just, they're insane. And I didn't like them. I didn't like anybody. You know what I mean? I just wanted to get high by myself. But I remember, thinking towards the end at one point that I wanted, the cops were, were, surveilling us and stuff like that, and they knew what we were doing. And they would, come to the house and, try and do their thing. And at the end, I just thought, at one point I thought that it would just be better if we got arrested just so it could all end. Because, I quit. I did it. I wanted it to end, but I didn't want it to end. And it's I couldn't do it myself. I didn't know what to do. And it just kind of all happened that I got clean. I ended up going to my mom's house because it was my brother's birthday. And we were supposed to go out to eat, which I don't know why, because I didn't eat anyway whenever I was getting high. And, so I went there. My brother was supposed to come, and he was supposed to pick me back up, and we were supposed to go back to using and whatever. Well, he never came, and I just ended up staying at home. And right before this happened, the person I was living with ended up, we got in this argument, and he ended up fracturing my ribs. And, because it's just crazy. You can't have any healthy relationships whenever you're using. And it was just, a crazy situation. And, I was in, a lot of pain, which I thought it was more just because I got hurt, but, I was also withdrawing off of everything. It was so painful, and that's, a good thing to remember because I don't want to live through that again. And, sometimes, I tend to forget about the pain and the chaos that goes along with getting high. But, I know, whenever I think about that, it, just makes me, sick, some of the stuff, and sometimes it's hard to believe, what I did, I don't know. Just drugs make you do crazy stuff. Like, it'll turn. And it doesn't matter who you are, what type of person you are. It discriminates against nobody. And, I don't know, just crazy. And I didn't know about NA, but my brother did. And when we were getting high, he'd, like, say stuff about the basic text and all this stuff. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, I didn't know what it was. I just knew, like, he was, like, kind of annoying with it, and I didn't like it. And he'd say, like, oh, you know, our dad said he'd pay for us to go to rehab. And I was always like, you could go. I'm not going to rehab. And, I don't know, just kind of, like, God had it. I mean, it happened because of God, and it just all found a place. I ended up getting clean. And then I started going to NA. And, you know, it's kind of like, at first, whenever you come here and you're new and you don't know anybody, it's like, for me, it was hard because, you know, I'm shy. I'm not real, like, outgoing until I get to know people. And it was just, it was kind of hard at first. I didn't, like, say anything for probably, like, 4 or 5 months in a meeting. Because I was too scared to talk. And, yeah, eventually I started talking to people and, you know, hanging out at meetings before and after the meeting. And I started to get to know people and it started to get easier for me. And I was working the steps, but I was, like, just doing them out of the stepping God just to do them. Like, I wasn't living them. I didn't really know what I was doing. I just knew I was answering questions in there. You know, it was done. And when I had almost 6 months clean, I relapsed, and I was using for a while, because after that, I was just, like, crushed, you know what I mean? Like, I lost that clean time, and I didn't want to get clean after that. I was just like, you know, screw it. And so I was using for a while, and it took me until about 8 months later to get clean, like, the time that I came in now. And you know, I got clean, and it just, at first, I didn't, whenever I got clean in March of 07, I didn't want to come to meetings, and I was just like, you know, I'm going to do this on my own, and so I tried that for a couple months, and, like, I was crazy, like they say, clean and crazy, like, I didn't know what to do, I knew something had to change, and so the one day I was in Greensburg, and I just decided to go to a meeting, and I did, and then that's what started me back into meetings. But I was, like, ashamed because I relapsed, so I didn't stand up for a key tag at first, you know. Like, I was celebrating that day that I went there, but I didn't stand up because I was, like, I didn't want people to know how much time I had and stuff. And, you know, it really doesn't matter how much time you have. It just matters that you're clean and that you stay clean. And it took me probably about 2 months after I started back going to meetings again to, like, really get a desire to stay clean and, like, I mean, something just clicked, and it was like, I wanted to stay clean. I had the desire. I started reading out of the basic text every day, and, you know, I was hanging out with people, and, you know, my recovery was really strong. Like, my first year, it was like, I was so into it. And then, you know, I started going to school after I got a year clean, and it was just, it kind of like, I stopped reading out of the basic text as much and everything, but I still got in meetings. I had sponsors. I was working the steps, and I was just grateful for my foundation the first year because it really helped me through that I had a strong foundation. And you can't, like, stay clean on yesterday's work, and I know this. And, you know, this time, like, staying clean, like, I take people's suggestions. I listen to what people have to say because before I was always like, oh, it's a suggestion. I don't have to listen to you. And, you know, now I know that, like, the people that I have in my support group, they're only here to help me. And they're not going to, like, steer me the wrong way. And I, like, value people's opinions today. And I listen to what they say. And part of, like, a big part of staying clean is step work for me. And I'm on my 7th step now. And, you know, that was, like, it was an adventure, I guess, step work. It's kind of like speaking, like, you don't want to do it, but once it's done, you feel better. And, the first 3 steps, I was okay with them. They weren't, you know, they didn't, like, scare me too much. But the 4th and 5th step, like, really scared me. It didn't scare me to work it, but I was afraid of having to tell it to somebody else. And I, like, got done with it, and it took me, like, 4 months to get the courage to actually go over it with somebody. That's how scared of it I was. And, you know, I went over it with someone. It wasn't my sponsor. I went over it with someone that's a real good friend of mine in recovery. And where she lives in this apartment, and the apartment is where the first place I ever smoked crack was in her apartment. Like, in the building, in the same apartment number. It was so crazy, like, I had to, like, go in there and tell my fourth, fifth step where I, like, the first place I ever smoked crack was. And it was just, like, crazy, but that goes to show you, like, I mean, I don't know, it was just so, like, ironic to be, like, this is where I smoked crack for the first time, and now I'm, like, recovering, and I'm healing in this place. But after I went over the fourth and fifth step, it felt so good, like, I mean, and everyone says that, oh, it's good after you do it, but I didn't believe anybody, you know, but it was really good, and, you know, now I'm working on my character defects and stuff, and, you know, that's going okay, I guess, right now, but I have a lot of work to still continue to do, and, like, a big part of staying clean for me is service work. And I'm real involved, like, I'm involved on I was the activities chair for our area, my term ended, but I'm still, like, helping, we're throwing a picnic in October, and, so, like, I'm helping do that, and it's just, service work was such a good way to, like, keep me involved in recovery, and to, like, keep me, you know, it got me to, like, know a lot of people through service work, and it's so great, like, I go to, like, a bunch of different areas, and I see all these different people, like, I know people from all over the place, and it's just, like, a great feeling. I love to see people that I haven't seen in a while, because, you know, they're, like, my favorite people, because people you see all the time, you know them more, and you, like, can see, you know, you see more, like, their defects and stuff like that. People you're not around all the time, it's, like, so great to hang out with them, because you don't know them enough to, like, really see how, you know. But, you know, NA is, like, so, there's so much to do here, like, retreats, there's all kinds of stuff to do, so, I mean, because some people are like, oh, you know, staying clean, it's boring or whatever, but it's not boring, there's so much stuff to do, and I've had so much fun in NA, and, you know, like, I get high off of life now, I don't have to be high to have fun, and, I don't know, this is, like, a great program, you just have to give it a chance. And, I don't know, just get involved in service, get a position, go to retreats, go to speaker jams, go anywhere you can. And, I don't know, I think that's all I have.
And I'd like to thank you for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. And our next speaker is Adam. Adam's from Beaver Valley.
Hey, everybody, I'm Adam. I'm an addict.
Hey, Adam.
I'm going to start by saying thank you to the program and committee for having me share out here. It's always an honor to share at an NA meeting, you know. No matter what, each group has one primary purpose, to carry the message, you know, and when you're a speaker, that onus is kind of left on you, so it's kind of humbling, you know. My topic's youth and recovery, and my clean date's 1-5-08, it's just the day I got clean. I really don't like celebrating clean time, I'm not too big on it, but I think it's important for the newcomer, you know, so I do it, grudgingly, you know. But, like, what is important, man, is to share that, like, when I came around here, I wasn't sure I even wanted to be here. You know, I never thought, really, that I wanted to get a day clean, you know, let alone that I could get a day clean or get that much time clean, you know. I might say I was hopeless, but I wasn't because I was here, you know, and just the act of being here shows that I had some type of hope. You know, I was grasping at straws, man, you know. I don't know, man, I live to use and use to live, and I love getting high, you know, and like, even with this amount of clean time, as small as it is, whatever, I don't know if it's going to change, my perspective's going to change, but looking back, man, like, I still enjoy those times, man. I'm not the dude that's going to say, like, my worst days clean is better than my best days using, because I had some good days using, you know. If I didn't, I wouldn't have kept using, I don't think, you know what I mean? But what it was like I fantasized and romanticized those good times to the point where it was like I was grasping at straws, you know? And I was trying to get something and recreate something that I think was impossible to recreate, you know? And that was the good times using, you know? I really, like, you know, I think that, like, my first experience with addiction wasn't even with drugs. And I need to say that because really using drugs, it says in our basic text in the first step, that using drugs is one symptom of the disease of addiction. And my first experience with the disease of addiction was I was about 12 years old, man, and I might even been younger than that, 11 or 12, man. And I remember I was at the grocery store with my mom, and we had just picked up groceries, and I seen her enter her MAC code in the machine to pay for the groceries, you know. And I got the idea that I could take her card and go get some money out so I could get whatever I wanted to get. I wasn't even using drugs, you know. And I did that, and the compulsion, man. Like, I took the first one, and I couldn't stop. And, like, she hit on it for me, man. It was like, at the end of the road with that individual thing, I wanted to get caught. Because I started feeling so bad about what I was doing, and I couldn't stop. I just wanted to get caught. I just wanted it to end, you know. So what happened was I gradually took more and more and more until it became completely obvious. And I was hoping my mom would catch it, but the bank caught it and called my mom and let her know what was going on. And I got sent away. You know, they sent me away for a little bit. And that was my first experience with addiction. So it's important for me to know that. And I take that experience with me on my journey now because I know that it's not about the drug, man. Drugs is just one part of the problem, you know. I'm the problem, you know. And it took a while for me to realize that, too, because on my journey of trying to get clean, I moved from area to area. I'm originally from Philadelphia. Me and my man were talking about it. He's from my neighborhood. You know, I grew up, like, where his dad's store was. But originally from Philadelphia, man, I would get in trouble in Philadelphia. And I thought that was the problem, you know, that Philly was the problem. And I just didn't mix well with the people there. And you know, the cops knew me too well, so they were targeting me, you know, and I was a victim, you know. So what I did, went to rehab in Lancaster, which was outside of Philly, about 45 minutes outside of Philly. And I took the suggestion and went to the halfway house, three-quarter house in York, PA, you know. And that didn't work, and I went to Baltimore and tried to get clean. I was living with my sisters for a little bit, and that didn't work. I kicked out of there, went back to Philly. And wound up catching the case and going upstate for 30 months, you know. So, like, I know, like, today, like, wherever I go, I took me with me. Wherever I went, I took me with me, you know. I couldn't run from this thing, you know. It's a disease of distorted perceptions, you know, the compulsion, the obsession, and the complete and total self-centeredness that tells me I don't got a problem, you got a problem, you know. I live to use and use to live. I like what I'm doing. You got a problem, you know, that mentality is what took me to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, and death, you know? And I know today, like, that shit saved my life, you know? But that alone wasn't enough to save my life because I needed something better. I needed something bigger, you know? Because, like, I'm a quick forgetter, and those consequences came and went like this, you know? So, like, you know, I could think about it, but I got a tunnel vision. As soon as something else was put in front of me, I'd run to that. You know, and I deal with the consequences later. And when I caught that last sentence, it was 30 months. It seemed a little more than I could chew at the time, you know. And it was in there that I made a decision, like, I got the desire, you know, that desire that was so hard for me to come by, you know. The only requirement for membership, thank God, is the desire, you know. And I ran with that desire, man. I had my parents send me the NA basic text stuff in there, and you know, and I was going to go to meetings and everything else. I didn't open the book, but I was serious about it, you know what I mean, in my head. And I went to meetings in there, and, you know, until they had night yard, and I stopped going to meetings in there, and I would just go to the yard and work out. But I tried to hit the meetings, you know, and I got out, and the first thing I did was I wanted to hit a meeting. I didn't make a move until I hit a meeting. I got paroled. You know, and I wasn't sure I was going to get it, but I got it. And I knew I needed something because I was afraid to go back because I didn't want that to be my life. I know what compulsion means. It means when I take the first one, I can't stop, you know. And I don't know how not to take the first one. So I need something, you know. And I came to the rooms, man. It was in Pittsburgh, so this is yet another area, you know, that I have no history with. You know, clean slate, no excuses. And I was out for about 2 months, and I was going to meetings, but then, like, I went to school. I got into school, and I started working and all that stuff, and the meetings took a back seat, man, because I was cool, you know. I figured I was all right now. I'm working. I hadn't used in almost 3 years, you know, and started going to work full-time, going to school full-time, and before I know it, I was hitting the bars. You know, I was using, I was going, and then I started going other places, you know. And I didn't realize what I know now, today, that, like, social acceptability does not equal recovery, man. You know, and that shit will kill somebody thinking that you're all right because you got a job now. You don't need these meetings. You don't need these rooms. You don't need these steps. You don't need these people, man. Because, like, that's the only thing that might get me by. And it was about 2 months out of the penitentiary, and I caught another charge. Because I went back to where we go, you know. And I had a really good PO, man. He was like, you're in school. He's like, I'm going to let you finish out this semester. But you're going back to jail. You know, you violate it. There's nothing I can do. My hands are tied. As soon as you go to court, you're going back to jail. I said, as soon as I go to court, he said, as soon as you go to court. Went home, called a lawyer, said, yo, I want you to put this court date back as far as you can push it back. You know, and I was like, push it back like you get it like a year from now. He's like, yeah, I got you. He's like, that's all you want? Yeah. So I paid him, you know, whatever I paid him. And he pushed it back. And now I was using my disease of manipulation and all that and getting in ways and finding ways and means to get what we want. We're masters at that, at the art of deception. And I used that, man. I pushed the court date back, pushed it back. And what I did do in the meantime, I started hitting the meetings and I got serious about it. And, you know, I was dead serious about going to meetings, but I wasn't sure I needed all the other stuff, you know. I knew I needed something, you know, and so I got me a girlfriend, you know what I mean? And we met an outpatient, and it was going to be the love of my life. We were getting married, and that was it, you know. And I was just going to keep going to meetings, and I was going to stay with her, and we were going to be all right, you know. And about 30 days clean, man. I told her I'm coming over. She says, all right, come over in about an hour. I was like, all right. Went right over. She was dope sick. Desperation on her face. I had no sponsor, no steps, no recovery. I didn't know how to handle it. I took her to cop, and I cop too. You know? And that's the power of this disease, man. All the meetings in the world, it's really, I mean, the meetings is just a part of the program. Like, what I need is I need a support group. I need steps. I need meetings too, you know? I need to do service work that she touched on, you know. I need everything that this thing has to offer because this disease ain't no fucking joke, you know. It's trying to kill me. Like, it's looking for any way it can, any little sneak, the cunning enemy of life. You know how powerful that statement is, the cunning enemy of life? All my life I'm going to have to deal with this thing just for today. I just handle it one day at a time because what I'm worried about right now, all that other shit doesn't really matter. It's there. But I can deal with it when it comes. It's when I start focusing on all the things that I'm projecting what I think is going to happen. Obviously, what I think don't work because my history tells me that I just end up with the same results over and over. Jails, institutions, and death. Jails, institutions, degradation, and death. Because it says that in our literature. And I was willing to settle for degradation, man, to use, to be honest with you. At some point in my day, like, I loved using, man. I was willing to go without watching my balls for 3 weeks so I could get that next one, you know? But it's not worth it to me today. Like what I've gotten in touch with today is that spirit of recovery that's, like, indispensable, man. It's priceless. Can't buy desire. You just can't buy desire. You can't buy appreciation or gratitude or hope or unconditional love for all the things that we find in these meetings, man. You know? And like I was a little confused being young coming in recovery, as to what the fuck it was that I was gonna do in recovery. You know, because my life was about going to meetings, hollering at chicks, you know, going to school, going to parties, not meetings, parties, clubs, you know, bars, crack houses, dope houses, you know. That's the type of shit that got me going, you know. And I wasn't sure what it was I was going to do in recovery, you know. How I was going to like recovery, how I was going to get to enjoy this thing, how I was going to learn appreciation. I think honest appreciation is like one of my favorite states of being, man. Like when I could just sit back and honestly appreciate where I'm at and everything for its natural beauty and what it really is, you know. When I'm not attaching all these, you know, distorted perceptions and thoughts and ideas to what I think shit should be and just take shit for what it is, man. And that's what I learned in here. Like that it's just a part of me just for today, you know. And if I know, like, if I stop doing what it is I've done to this point to get me to that, it'll be gone like that. I'm one bad decision away. So I gotta be real careful while I step, you know. So like I was telling you that you know, I pushed off, you know, the court date, pushed it back, and it worked. I was about a year later, I'd been going to school, was getting to meetings. You know, and yeah, I had that little relapse with that chick, but after that, I realized I needed something, and what I needed was the steps. Because I came in these rooms and shared honestly what was going on with me and how I had used, and somebody came up to me after the meeting and said, you know, you relapsed because you ain't working steps, right? I said, oh yeah, let me go get the step working guy. So I went and got the step working guy, like she said, and I was going to work steps. And I was going to do it to the best of my ability. So I opened the book to the preface, and it said, you can work this book however you want. Answer some of the questions. Answer all the questions. Just don't answer it alone. You need to get a sponsor. So I called the dude who said, you know, you relapsed because you ain't working steps, and asked him if he would sponsor me. And it took a while for me to ask somebody to be my sponsor because I was afraid, being young and being this big ego-driven whatever I was, that somebody was going to say no, you know. And I could be the biggest tough guy in the world and all this, but I couldn't handle somebody saying no because I felt like it would shatter my dreams and shatter my hope of recovering a new way of life, you know. And when I asked this person, he didn't say no. He didn't say, I'll think about it. He didn't say, ask around. He was like, I'd be honored to be your sponsor. That's what I needed. And that's probably what I need to say to people, you know, and I don't always say that because I get caught up in myself, you know. I get caught up in what I want and the things that I need to do. And whether or not I'm going to be able to handle it. And fear is a lack of faith. And I get caught up in that fear a whole lot more than I'm caught up in my faith. Because it's just easier for me. It's just the way I think. It's just the way I feel, you know. But like, slowly but surely, man, this program's changing the way I see things, you know. And that's why I keep coming back. So I got off parole, man, and I managed to push it back far enough to where, like, I had more good going for me than I did bad. That one case, like there was a sign on my wall, and my first initial instinct when I caught that case was to run, you know what I mean? And there's a sign on my PO's wall, and I remembered this sign. It said, before you run, think about where you're going. Your PO's number one job is to try to make you succeed. I wasn't sure how much I believed it, you know, but it's the only thing I had going for me, you know what I mean, because if I ran, I was just going to keep running, and shit, the records was going to pile up, you know, and just because we get clean don't mean that records don't keep coming, because it starts raining, when I'm running, eventually the shit's going to pile, and it's just going to hit me, you know, and recovery's not easy, man, because, like, I'm facing all the things today clean without the use of any minor mood-altering stuff that I was running from all my life, you know. But I know, like, just for today, I don't have to use no matter what, even if I want to, because I do sometimes. There's times when I just want to use, man. I love getting high. Like, I love it, you know. It'd be, you know, I like to be, you know, blasted sitting back listening to these speakers, you know. But I know, in reality, that if I was blasted, I wouldn't be listening to no speakers. That shit sounds real good. I wouldn't be going to no concerts. I wouldn't be going to no baseball games. I wouldn't be going to school. I'd be finding the next one. That's what happens. That's the fantasy I try to recreate in my mind, you know? And, so, like, thanks to this program, I'm off parole today. I maxed out my sentence. I'm a student in a major university. Things I never thought was possible, man, are going on in my life, the dynamic. I always thought Philly was the problem. A couple weeks ago, I went back to Philly, man. And it was like, it was awesome. Like, the people that God put in my path when I went back there were doing something with themselves. I wasn't running into people. And a lot of the people that I ran with are either dead or in jail, so I wasn't running into them anyway. You know? And, like, I got, like, a great appreciation for this program and the dynamic of restoration of sanity. My idea of restoration of sanity was to stop catching cases. I never thought in a million years I'd be able to go back home and enjoy it. Never thought in a million years. And just like in my active use, wherever I go, I took me with me. Just for today, wherever I go, I take my recovery with me. So I don't have to use no matter what, you know. And, like, I think one of my favorite quotes is in the basic text. It says, it's the biggest hope shot in a book, because the book doesn't speak in absolutes too often. Says most of us, many of us, some of us, you know, sometimes that kind of stuff. Like it says in there, we have never seen an addict who lived in Narcotics Anonymous program relapse. Never. That's all I got. I'm Adam. I'm an addict.